What is up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I am the managing editor over at movies.com, and this is a podcast about summer movies. If you haven't listened to us yet, we are a podcast that's running from early May through the end of August. We are dealing with only summer movies, past, present, and future, so you get a little bit of everything on this podcast. Joining me today, as he is every week, hopefully every week this summer, is my good friend and podcasting pal, Sean O'Connell. He is the movie's content director over at cinemablend.com, and I implore you to check out both of those websites as they have tons of really cool movie-related information. Sean, what's going on? I hope that this week is treating you well. It hasn't been treating me so well because I missed both of the movies that are coming out this week.
Your stories are brutal. I can't take your stories. If people have tooth problems or tooth fetishes, I don't want to say tooth fetish because that makes it sound weird, but like if people talk about their teeth and tooth problems, it really bothers me.
It hurts too. I hate it too. I had a root canal this week and had some problems leading up to it. And I had to miss both A Million Ways to Die in the West and Maleficent, and I'm pretty bummed about that. And I was especially bummed when I was sitting on the couch screaming in agony because of this pain. There's nothing worse than tooth pain. I mean, yeah, okay, there are things that are worse than tooth pain.
A few things.
But tooth pain is awful, and I do not wish it upon anybody. But I'm okay. I've recovered.
Yes, you're back.
Podcast. I've bounced back. I've come off the DL, and we're here, and we're going to talk about some fun things. I want to talk more about Maleficent today, and Sean can spoil it. You know, this is the after the movie came out podcast. We run on Mondays. We try to run on Mondays if we can, so this way we can talk about the films and spoil them and talk all about them and all their best scenes, their worst scenes, what have you. So I haven't seen Maleficent, but Sean, I'm allowing you to spoil it for me.
That's fine. And we'll get into – it feels like this is just a bit of an off week. Like every week so far since the summer started, it's been – blockbuster, blockbuster, blockbuster with Spider-Man 2, Godzilla, X-Men. And I'm not trying to downplay the effects of these two films, but it just feels like we're taking a little bit of a break before, you know, Edge of Tomorrow kicks back up into high gear, of which you are quoted in the TV spot. Congratulations on that.
I am. I love that movie. Awesome. I'm okay. Whenever they quote me in a TV spot for a movie I love, I'm very happy for it. Because I support it wholeheartedly.
Well, I can't support Maleficent. And again, I'm just going to warn you guys, if you haven't seen it yet and you don't want to be spoiled on it, then leave now. But it seems like what they want to do with this story is apply the Wicked formula from the Broadway show where they spun The Wizard of Oz and tried to show it to you through another character's perspective.
Which I liked. I love Wicked.
Oh, it's great. I went into Wicked kind of knowing the story and was blown away by how it made me think about The Wizard of Oz completely differently. And I think that it worked really well for that project, but I don't think that means you can just sort of apply that formula to any story now. Like you can't just be like, okay, we're going to make the Wicked version of Sleeping Beauty, which is almost what this tries to be. And the problem with it is that it just shifts gears so many times and you never really know what motivation or what tone you're supposed to be following. It starts off with, obviously, Angelina Jolie plays Maleficent, who is the fairy who curses Sleeping Beauty and puts Aurora under her spell in the animated classic and, of course, in the fairy tale. So you start with Maleficent as a young girl, as a young fairy, and you almost start to bond with her because she lords over this land, and it's by a first-time director, and he worked in special effects and CGI, and it looks great. Like, whenever you get to these creatures and these creative ways to paint these worlds, it's not boring from that perspective, or it's not a failure in that perspective. But then you get to the point where she has to curse the baby, and she's angry for a reason, and we can talk about the reason in a little bit, but, like, you like her, and then you're mad at her, and then right off the bat, the movie wants you to start liking her again. It keeps shifting its allegiances so often, because then you have the king, who initially is friends with Maleficent, and then he has to betray her. And this is a guy played by Charlotte Copley in the film. Then he has to betray her, which is what makes Maleficent so angry at him. Then because she feels bad that she cursed the baby, then he becomes the bad guy, and it's like it just keeps shifting his gears.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like they needed to have a sympathetic – they needed to make the villain sympathetic and still be a villain. And it's that – it's finding that balance.
Yes.
Which is tough, which Wicked does that pretty well.
Yes, because Wicked wants the Wicked Witch of the West to sort of be an antagonist for, you know, almost half of the story before you start to – before you start to question whether she is or not. With this one, it's almost like they didn't – and it's only a 96-minute movie, 97-minute movie. And so they have to very quickly establish all of these different personalities in Maleficent. And I thought it just made it very disjointed and kind of schizophrenic. Now – there's even bigger problems in terms of, is this too scary for kids? Like, I didn't bring my kids. My boys, I have boys. They weren't that interested. They did not seem very interested. I don't think this is for kids. And it's strange because then Disney wanted to do an alternate take on its fairy tale. But the minute you start filtering it through the villain's perspective, you automatically sort of say, well, we want to go darker with it, which is fine. Again, that fits certain stories. But I don't think that it fits this because you have a baby who's, you know, cursed. You have a girl who's abandoned by her father. You have this Maleficent character who, you know, there are a lot of think pieces popping up on other websites now that are talking about what is this. When Charlton Copley okay, again, if you've made it this far, we're getting into spoilers. And I'm going to ruin it for you, Eric. I'm sorry about that.
Ruin it. Ruin it, Sean.
He has to cut off her wings, or he has to – Charlton Copley, in order to inherit the kingdom, has to prove that he has done away with Maleficent. But Maleficent is his friend, and he doesn't really want to do that. So while she's sleeping, he drugs her, and she's sleeping, and he cuts off her wings. And she wakes up, and she's devastated because these are like her appendage, essentially. And I've read places, and it's not a stretch. It feels like a sexual violation. Like some people are throwing the word rape around. And I don't think Disney wants the word rape associated with their family-friendly Memorial Day weekend Maleficent movie. But it really does sort of play that way. Because then it becomes a vengeance story where she's so angry at the man who violated her that she curses his baby and they have this war between their two kingdoms that stretches for the rest of the movie. They're heavy topics, and I don't think that the movie handles them well. I don't think you'll bring your kids and they'll be like, boy, this is a rape fetish movie. They won't pick up on that, but you might, and you might be a little bit disturbed, and it tries to go into some dark places like that that I don't think kids are going to understand what exactly is going on.
Hmm. It's interesting. It's interesting that I'm curious. You know what I look at when I look at a movie like Maleficent, I look at all of the movies that Disney does outside of Marvel and Star Wars.
Right.
And all of these franchises that they try to start, from John Carter to The Lone Ranger to sure. Prince of Persia, and Maleficent, I guess, is another one. And they're just not having a lot of success. And I could see where Maleficent came from, because Wicked hasn't been adapted yet, but it's ridiculously popular. So, okay, let's take the Wicked platform and apply it to Maleficent. But then also, Alice in Wonderland did bonkers for them. They're making a sequel to that. So they did find a franchise in Alice in Wonderland. And that's going to continue making movies. And so I guess maybe they're finding success in taking their older animated classics and sort of reinventing them in the live-action realm. Maleficent, I don't know if it'll be as successful as Alice in Wonderland. I think from what you're talking about and from what I see is that and I got this early on when this movie was that nobody really could figure out, is it too dark for my kids? What is it? And I've been doing a lot of radio this week and talking, and I don't want to, you know, say kids don't go see it because it is a Disney movie. But I am saying that if your kids are like 3 and 4, maybe even 5, it's a little too dark. Is that what you think?
I think so, definitely. There are some really interesting things for them to look at, imaginative things for them to look at in the first 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, where it takes place in this world where Maleficent is this fairy, and before it gets into the central conflict. And even when Aurora is after she's cursed as the baby, the king immediately, because she's not supposed to fall into the deep sleep until she turns 16. So the king, his solution is, I'm going to banish her to this cottage in the woods, and I'm going to put these three bumbling fairies in charge of her, and they're going to raise her, but she's incompetent. The fairies are incompetent, and they can't raise this baby. So Maleficent, like right off the bat, feels bad about the fact that this baby's being raised by idiots. And so she keeps intervening and helping the baby. And so it's like, but you just cursed this baby and now you're like helping it to keep it alive.
That's a little weird.
So, but then as the movie keeps going, like this conflict between the two kingdoms builds, and that's when it becomes aimed at older kids. I get the impression with Maleficent, and this also speaks to the Alice in Wonderland one that you brought up, where someone at Disney just said, like, wouldn't it be great if we had X amount, fill in the blank actor, to play this great role? So Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter. Wouldn't Johnny Depp be great as the Mad Hatter? Or, you know, wouldn't Angelina Jolie be great as Maleficent? And then they ask the person, but it's like half-hearted. Like, hey, would you want to play this? And when the person says yes, they're surprised. Like Disney's like, oh, well, now we need a story. You know, we got this person on board. And the hook is come see Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter. But you don't really have a director or a story or someone who really passionately wanted to make a, hey, I got a great idea. I have this story about Sleeping Beauty that I have to tell. It's almost like they get the casting first and then start backpedaling to see how they can fill in the blanks, because the story in both of those films, I don't think, has been strong. I don't even remember the story for the Alice in Wonderland one. I just remember Johnny Depp on all the posters and the material. And I won't remember the Maleficent story a few weeks from now.
Let me ask you this. Is this the last big movie that we see Angelina Jolie star in? Like, I'm talking big, lead, a little bit over the top in terms of performance and the movie itself. Is this the last time we see her? Is she going to now disappear behind the camera, maybe do some smaller films, maybe do some dramas? I know she's working on a project with her husband, Brad Pitt. Is this her last hoorah?
Yeah, that's a great question.
As a movie star?
That's a great question. I'm going to say no, because I just think that she's young enough still at this point. I'm going to look up how old she is at this point, where, you know, there's going to be a project that comes down the pipe where someone's going to interest her. She's 38 years old. 38. She is a child,
but she strikes me as someone who's sort of transitioning in her career. You know, she wants to be a director.
Yeah.
She wants to do smaller projects that she's really passionate about, between the movie that she has coming out later this year, as well as the movie she's working on with Pitt. Whereas he, I think, is still doing these big movies. I don't sense that she's really interested in that anymore. I really feel like I'm going out with this one.
Well, and she basically did it because she has kids. Like, how many actors have said, I took this family project, this Disney project, because I have kids and I think they would appreciate it. And she even cast one of her own kids in the movie for a very brief scene. So that's why I think if some other project rolls around that speaks to her from a family perspective, or, you know, just as an actress wanting to get back in. I mean, she's collaborated with so many great directors over the years that I could see another filmmaker being like, I have a perfect role for you and you should try this. And again, she's super young. But you're right. I do think that her next stage is happening now, and it's going to be as a filmmaker, especially if her next one comes out and gets the sort of awards buzz or, you know, just dramatic pedigree that we think is going to come with it.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Let's transition here. And usually we do some news at the beginning. This time we did the review at the beginning. We're doing some news in the middle, and then we're going to do something really fun, which I'm looking forward to. But let's hit a couple of pieces of summer movie news. Ant-Man. We talked about this last week. Edgar Wright is no longer directing the movie, which is a real bummer, because of script rewrites. And he wasn't crazy about the script that was rewritten, and that he it's compromising his vision to the point where he no longer wants to direct the movie. So now they're bringing in new directors. Now there's talk of will they make the July date of 2015. This is supposed to come out pretty much a year from now.
Yes.
Will they make that date? Who will direct it? You know, as we record this, and it's funny because Sean and I went back and forth. We were recording this on Friday. We're going to run it on Monday. And there are some contenders as we speak right now. There's three contenders for the role, or three people at the top of the wish list for the director of Ant-Man. But we feel like this is a decision that's going to be made very, very soon, and to the point where Monday, when you're listening to this, the decision could already be made.
If it's Marvel, like they did to us last Friday, it'll be at the end of the day on Friday as everyone's trying to shut their computers down, and all of a sudden we got to jump back in and get into the Edgar Wright story. Are we mentioning the names? Should we mention the names?
Well, it's Adam McKay.
Right.
Ruben Fleischer. Fleischer.
Right.
And
Ross and Thurber.
Ross and Thurber, yeah. And those are the names. People are thinking maybe it's going to be Ruben Fleischer, Adam McKay. I think a lot of people think it would be kind of funny if Adam McKay did it. Although I think the way he shoots movies, Marvel doesn't shoot movies like that. They're not going to let him improv, you know, and go off and shoot 35 variations of each scene. They don't work like that.
And is it just because he worked with Paul Rudd before? Like, is that why he's on that list?
It might be.
Seems odd.
But also comedy. Also comedy. I think they definitely think they want these movies to be infused with a lot of humor, and yes. it really works for them. So I could see him being there as well. But we don't know. So the one thing that I don't think will be decided by Monday is whether or not they will make this date, and how important is it for this movie to make this date. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, if I'm someone who's watching the Avengers sequel in May, I don't know if I really want another Marvel Studios movie to come in July. It's almost like I want to savor.
Well, this is the test run, right? I mean, it's because Cap came out in April, and they're going to have Guardians in August.
Yes.
So they're further apart than these two.
Than these two would be, because this is early June. I don't know the exact date. I think it was like July 9th, maybe? Is it the weekend after?
No, I think it's the 15th or the 17th.
15th? Okay.
But anyway, it's Marvel trying to deliver on their promise of them saying, we're going to give you two movies a year. And I think the minute they miss that, you know, the skeptical fanboys are going to be like, oh, see, they couldn't even do it. You know, they barely made it 1 year where they delivered two. But I don't want them hitting that promise by delivering crap movies.
No.
They take the time, find the right filmmaker and punch up the script and get it to where it needs to be. Their casting so far has been spot on, and I still love the casting for Ant-Man.
So do I.
But I don't want them to rush and hire somebody who just happens to be around. I'd rather they wait. And when you just said earlier that it's a year from now, that really concerns me.
It does. I'm curious to see what happens. And what I'm really curious about is, I mean, the script rewrite, they came back. They probably changed some stuff, but it's still got to have Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish all over it. And
yes.
I'm curious to see now somebody else take that, their sort of stylistic vision, because they really are visionary filmmakers, and apply it. You know, I don't know. It should be interesting to see. I have all the faith in the world in Marvel. I really think they know what they're doing. But I can't help but be really – I'm really bummed out, man, that Edgar Wright's not doing this film. I would have loved to see his take on a Marvel movie. And I hope that, if anything, he does return and do some kind of superhero movie, because I think his sort of stylistic approach would be really fun in that arena.
Well, it's not going to be Adam McKay. I mean, I don't think he's ever directed a film that he didn't script. And I can't see him coming in and being a hired gun and taking over someone else's script.
No.
And that's what Marvel's going to want this person to do. It makes a lot more sense for someone like Ruben Fleischer, you know, who did Zombieland and just came off of Gangster Squad and kind of needs a boost,
yep.
You know, after that film didn't really connect. Or even, you know, Ross and Thurber's got We're the Millers in his corner, but hasn't really signed on for anything major after this. And this could be a good opportunity for them to take on Marvel and get into that that boys club, essentially, or that film club, and put some kind of a stamp on it. But I can't see it. While McKay would be the big name to get, I cannot see him taking this on.
Neither can I. But we'll see. By the time you're listening to this, Demario would be a director, so you could just skip over this entire section.
Oh, still listen to our insights. They're still.
What other news do we want to talk about? What are the summer movie news? Oh, you know what we're going to talk about? Godzilla, the sequel to Godzilla.
Oh, another director problem, yes.
Another director problem. They're making a sequel to Godzilla. They announced it the Monday after it came out. But Gareth Edwards is making a Star Wars spinoff film in between. And they say, you know, Legendary has said we always knew that Gareth was going to make another film after Godzilla between sequels. We just didn't know it was going to be Star Wars. But yeah, he's going to make a Star Wars spin-off film. It's going to come out in December 2016. But that means that Godzilla is not going to come out probably until 2018. We're probably going to get 4 years.
Wow.
In between Godzilla movies, which, you know, and I remember I was on Twitter talking about this, and people pointed out that, you know, most movies go about 3 years in between their installments. So it's not completely out of whack to get. I mean, how much time was between Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek? I think that was 4 years, was it?
Maybe three, somewhere around there. At least they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You know, that was the point of rebooting that franchise. And I guess this is the point of rebooting Godzilla, right? You didn't, it was never just going to be a one-off.
No. But do you think that, is 4 years a long time for a Godzilla sequel? Do you feel like they should have switched directors and had somebody else's take on Godzilla in a shorter amount of time? Or do you feel like 4 years, and you have to remember, this first Godzilla movie, it started kicking around in 2004. They didn't bring on Gareth Edwards until 2010. They didn't announce it until 2011, maybe. So what I'm saying is this Godzilla movie took about 4 years from the time they brought on Gareth Edwards till release. So if this one took 4 years and people were really excited about it, shouldn't we just let them wait another 4 years?
No, nobody knows who Gareth Edwards is. And I like Gareth Edwards. And we know who he is, obviously. But people know who Godzilla is. And they want Godzilla. And you have a creative team now that knows how to make that monster, to create the monster. And I'm sure while they were doing this first one, they were brainstorming who the next monsters were going to be. And I'm sure that they were starting to work on the effects to make them come to life on screen. So I guarantee you we don't wait 4 years until the next Godzilla.
Really? You're guaranteeing that we're not waiting 4 years?
I'm guaranteeing it. I'm putting it on record today, Friday, May 30th. Gareth Edwards will not be directing Godzilla 2. They will have a very amicable parting of ways, and everyone will understand that he had to go take a Star Wars spinoff because you just don't turn that down. But Legendary loves cash, and they're going to want a sequel sooner rather than later, and they're going to hire somebody who can carry on what Gareth Edwards started. And I bet you have a Godzilla movie. Maybe it'll be 3 years, potentially even 2 years. But
Star Wars comes out December 2016. Realistically, if Edwards was going to do it, there's no way they're going to come out in May 2017. There's no way he's going to direct it. And I imagine they want to bring it back in May because they had a lot of success on that week. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring it back on the same weekend.
So May 2017, that's 3 years from now. And that would, and I'm not saying it would be Edwards. I'm saying another filmmaker would step in and guarantee them a delivery date by that time.
Wow,
I'm curious. I completely think it's feasible.
I don't agree. I think they're going to stick with Edwards, and we're going to see it in May 2018. But that's me.
Hmm.
Let's move on to my favorite part of this week's podcast. You know, we always talk about summer movies, past, present, and future. It's prom season. I have a lot of friends who have prom this weekend. My kids aren't old enough, neither of yours, but I do have friends that have kids that are old enough to go to prom. And so you may be listening to this. You may have kids that either just went to prom or they have their proms coming up. And so that got us thinking about the best dance scenes, like at a high school dance.
Yes.
And it's funny because the first thing that came out of this idea was just let's just tie it to prom, best high school dance scenes in movies. And it just happened that both of the movies that Sean and I chose were actually summer movies.
And we needed like 10 seconds to come up with our – like as soon as you said that idea, we both were like, oh, I know what I'm doing.
I love high school dance scenes. High school dance scenes, you know, there, a lot of them – there's a lot of familiar cliches played in them, you know, from the people who aren't dancing with the people that they should be dancing to the spotlight dance where somebody who you don't expect can dance really all of a sudden shows their moves. There's what other great high school? There's the going into this, the wacky thing that happens in the bathroom because there's always something wacky that happens in the bathroom. There's the hero at some point is going to get bummed out because the girl that he likes is dancing with somebody else. So we're going to cut to him sitting on the steps outside with his with his hands and his head in his hands. And the girl that he should be with is going to sit next to him and be like, you know, maybe we should. They're going to have a moment. You know, but it's not going to happen then. It's going to happen in the next act. But they're going to have that moment where everybody's like, you see, these are the two that should be together.
This is a whole podcast.
It's a whole podcast
just on high school dancing.
I love high school dancing. Maybe because I didn't really go to a lot of high school dances. I went to one prom, and it wasn't even my high school's prom. It was my friend's high school. I hung out with a bunch of my friends, went to another high school. I went to their prom, actually.
That's weird.
It was a little weird.
Why didn't you go to your prom?
You know what? Because I had this whole crew that I was hanging out with back in high school, and they all went to another school, high school. And I had a lot of friends at my high school, but my best friends went to another high school. And I said, you know what? I can do two proms. And my date that brought me to her prom, she's like, I'll come to your prom if you want. But then I thought, you know what? I'd rather have one prom, and I'd rather it be with all of my best friends, and it doesn't matter what school I'm at, because it was more important to me to be with my people, if you know what I'm saying.
I hear you. That's fine. You're loyal to your crew.
Yes,
like it.
Yes. But let's go. Let's go with our favorite high school dance scenes. Not necessarily happening at a prom, but it is prom season, and so we're linking it to prom. What is yours?
Mine is it uses none of the cliches that you just talked about, and because it's not a romantic scene. It is from The Karate Kid.
Yes.
Which is why I cannot imagine how you did not pick this, because that's one of your favorite movies of all time.
It is. It is. But it's not my favorite scene in the movie. So I love this.
I love this scene.
It's an awesome scene.
Daniel wearing the shower curtain, obviously, and seeing Elizabeth's shoe and going into the bathroom and realizing he can finally get one over on Johnny. And then having to flee the dance scene so quickly before he gets his ass handed to him. And you can just remember the music playing in the background as he's in the bathroom, putting the hose over the top, and just the tension and suspense that I felt. I guess it was because I was, you know, how old was I, 10 years old when I was watching The Karate Kid? It came out in 84. And just fearing for Daniel's life because I knew he was going to get served by these guys. And
he does get served by them.
But it was a sweet scene before it because he does dance with what's her name? Allie? Is that
Allie.
Her name?
Yeah. Allie.
So they get a little dance, and you know he's got the costume, and he gives him she gives him the flower, and all that. There are some sweet moments, but then it completely shifts gears and becomes this he's got to run for his life type scene, and I love it for that reason.
He's got, and in that scene when he runs for his life, actually he Johnny really kicked him in the face by accident, and Macchio got hurt badly from that scene. I think he actually still has a scar somewhere on his face. From that scene.
At the fence?
Yeah, at that fence. And he's talked about that. Apparently, they shot that scene really late at night. The guys were jacked up on coffee, all of those Cobra Kai maniacs. And they really kicked Macchio in the face and really hurt him.
Where else do you get Karate Kid trivia like this?
Oh, I know all about the Karate Kid.
Only this podcast.
But yeah, and you know what's funny about that scene is not until like the 10th time that I watched that movie did I know that he was rolling a joint in that bathroom stall. Because the first couple of times I watched it, I was young. I didn't really understand. I didn't know what that was. I was just like, oh, I'd be pissed if water was on me too. Then you would catch it on television, and I don't even think they show the joint on television.
Right, right.
And so you have no idea what he's doing in the stall when you're watching it on television. And it wasn't until like years later where I saw versions of it, and I was just like, oh, that's what he's doing. I'd be pissed too.
What a terrific camera angle to choose, too, to shoot from way down, you know, to shoot up and to see it coming over the top. A great scene.
It is a great scene. Okay.
Better. Come on.
Okay, mine. I didn't tell you what mine was. Okay. Can't Buy Me Love.
Ah, nice. Nice.
This movie. Let me give you some background on Can't Buy Me Love. Can't Buy Me Love, the first time I watched it, I had heard about this movie. I was young when it came out. I was like a preteen when this movie came out. And I remember I didn't watch it until it aired on television. And I remember hearing that it was going to air on television. And I was afraid. And my cousin was staying at my house. So I was afraid that my mother wouldn't let me watch it. So I remember when I was going to go downstairs with my cousin, I was like, you know, we'll go downstairs. We'll put the TV on downstairs and nobody will know we're watching this movie.
Right.
And my mother was like, what movie are you going to watch? And I told her I was watching A Mad, Mad, Mad World.
Okay.
Instead of – because that was also on at the same time. And I watched Can't Buy Me Love. And I love Can't Buy Me Love. I just love this movie. And of course, if you don't know Can't Buy Me Love, this is a movie about Patrick Dempsey. He plays a nerd who pays one of the most popular girls at school to be his girlfriend for an X amount of time.
It was like a week. I think it's like a week.
Yeah, and turn him into a cool guy.
Right.
And there's lots of pratfalls and funny moments in the movie. But the one of my favorite scenes is when they are at the high school dance and Dempsey doesn't know how to dance. And when he's at home – He thinks he's watching American Bandstand to learn how to dance, but really he's watching the African Cultural Channel, and they show the African anteater ritual, and he starts learning.
I'm trying to think of the name of it. That's funny.
And he starts learning it, learning the ritual, and then he does it at the school, and of course all the idiots around them think it's like the cool new dance, and they all start doing it, and then his nerds that he's ignoring in the corner, because that's what happens, you know, he ditches his real friends in order to be a cool guy, but then realizes, you know what, he liked himself the way he is already. But, and of course his friends know that's the African anteater ritual. I don't know how they would know that.
Do you know that was my signature move at weddings, at family weddings?
Was from that dance.
Yeah, well, when you're at a family wedding, it inevitably gets to a point where, like, everybody sort of forms a circle, and people, like, go into the circle in the middle and start doing some kind of dance. Well, I would always do that. And I always had, like, one or two cousins who knew the movie and knew it, too. It's the sort of thing where, like, you dance in a circle with your feet real fast, and then your hands go up by your head.
Yeah, and then you shake back and forth. Yeah, and then you shake them, like, back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was my thing. I would always do that dance from Can't Buy Me Love.
And then the guy, your friends in the corner would be like, the African anteater ritual.
It's such a signature dance. I mean, the minute you do it, if people know the movie, they know it's exactly from that film. So.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's very funny. That's a really good choice.
Yeah, but that's a great movie. And of course, there's tons of popular high school dance scenes from Carrie to Footloose.
Oh, Footloose would have been a good one too. Yeah.
Gotta love Footloose. But yeah, those are, so enjoy your prom if you're going to prom, and watch Can't Buy Me Love.
Try the African anteater dance.
Try the African anteater dance, because I bet you none of the kids know it. None of the kids in your school know it.
No, with good reason.
With good reason. And you know, next time you're at a Halloween party, wear the shower. I always wanted to wear that costume. I've seen it. In, you know, they sell it now.
It's a terrific costume.
It is a terrific costume.
And a great movie.
It is.
Next week, finally, Edge of Tomorrow.
Next week, we get to talk about Edge of Tomorrow. Did you see it yet?
No, I see it on Monday. You see it on Monday.
Yeah, okay, you see it on Monday. I've seen it. I'm quoted in the TV trailers as saying refreshingly original, which some people are giving me some crap about because, you know, they're like, it's Groundhog Day. It's Starship Troopers. And it's not so much that, yeah, you know, every movie that comes out is going to be familiar to you in some respect. And I'll defend my opinion next week when we talk about it. But, you know, it's more about the execution. It's not so much about whether or not the scenario is familiar to you. It's about how they execute it, and that they execute it in a fresh way. And that's what I feel this movie does.
Is he back?
The Cruise is back. We'll talk about it next week. I'm really curious to hear what your thoughts are. I hope you like it.
Awesome.
And everyone else out there, I hope you enjoyed your weekend at the movies, and thank you for listening to this podcast, and leave a comment and let us know what you'd like to talk about. If there's any summer movie related topics that you want to hear us babble on about, feel free. Let us know, and have a great week. Take care, everyone.